In conjunction with Golf Life Navigators, the ultimate resource to helping people discover, experience, and ultimately secure their ideal golf lifestyle in the Sun Belt, the Grill Room is proud to partner with Golf Life Navigators and voice the game. Interesting and exclusive interviews with notable golf media that have just amazing stories to tell you through their years of covering professional golf will come your way. Kelly Elbin, host of Voices of the Game, has a unique background, and golf has been a part of his life that few people may even know about. So in this week's episode, Bob's going to turn the tables on Kelly, and Kelly becomes the guest. Here you go.
Hi, this is Kelly Elbin with Golf Life Navigators. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Voices of the Game, where we spend a few moments with outstanding golf media talking special moments, special times in the great game of golf. Joined again by our good friend Bob Bupka, more than 35 years covering this game. Mr. Bupka, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Kelly, and I'm going to turn the tables just a little bit for our listeners, because
all right,
we all know your career with the PGA of America, but you have a rich history in this game. I want you to tell our listeners about your dad, who was legendary as a golf professional, even leading to the opportunity for Kelly Elbin to be a caddy during a Ryder Cup.
That is right.
I mean, that is so fascinating. Share that with us.
Well, Bob, you're very kind. Thank you. I was very fortunate to be the director of communications for the PGA of America for 11 years, was also the editor and associate editor of PGA Magazine for about 6 or 7 years, the publication that goes to PGA club professionals throughout the country. But really, Bob, I'm the product of an extraordinary person, Max Elbin, born in 1920 into a home in the mountains of Western Maryland. Born to nothing, as were many kids of that time, learned the game as a caddy, eventually rose to become the head professional at Burning Tree Club, which is a, quietly say, all-men's club in the Washington, D.C. area. Served there as the head professional, Bob, only for 50 years, from 1945 to 1995, teaching presidents of the United States along the way the great game of golf, starting with President Eisenhower, going all the way through the first President Bush. So in and of itself, an extraordinary run as the PGA head professional at Burning Tree Club. Well, my father also wanted to give back to the game. It was his very nature. And so he ran for national PGA office. And in fact, in the late 60s, he became the president of the PGA of America. Was the last three-term president of the PGA of America, 1966, 67, and 68. All of the current PGA presidents, who are golf professionals, served two-year terms. Bob, the time that my dad was the president of the PGA was a tumultuous one. And it was tumultuous because ultimately the players who, what you now know as the PGA Tour, broke away from the PGA of America. And quite honestly, it was understandable. Television had come along. Arnold, Jack, Gary Player, people were beginning to know these individuals, and they felt like we need to have our own operating system separate from the PGA of America. And in hindsight, the extraordinary success of the PGA Tour is undeniable. But my father was just the right person for that time because, among other things, in the agreement that the PGA of America forged with the PGA Tour, my father recommended that the PGA of America keep an event called the Ryder Cup, which at that time was a mismatch. It had been clearly dominated by the United States against Great Britain and Ireland. And really, while it was on the map internationally, Bob, it wasn't really a competitive event. It all changed in 1979 when Europe came in. And instead of being the U.S. against just a portion of Europe, it was all of Europe. So all of a sudden you have Bernhard Langer. And you have Seve Ballesteros, and you have the Ryder Cup of what you see now, which is the greatest spectacle in the game. There's just no question about it. My father, upon his time at the PGA, when it ended, he continued to serve on the Rules Committee at the PGA Championship as a past president, served on the Rules Committee for 30-some years. So my summer vacation for many years was wherever the PGA Championship was played. 1974, outside of Detroit, we happened to be staying at the same hotel as Lee Trevino. I took a liking to Mr. Trevino. He gave me his hat after he won the PGA Championship that year. And then 5 years later, he calls my father in July of 1979 and says, "Max, I'd love to have Kelly caddy for me at the Ryder Cup at the Greenbrier." Again, this is the first year that all of Europe is competing. And my dad, being the honorable man that he was, says to Lee, "Well, Lee, let me check with my wife and I'll get back to you." And he checks with my dearly departed mother, and she says, "Well, Max, he's just starting college," which I was at the University of Richmond in August of 1979. "He's just starting college, and I don't want him to miss those first few classes." Well, being the youngest of five, coddled from the beginning, my youngest of three sisters, Nancy, finds out that my mother has said, "No, he can't make it," and says, "Mother, for God's sake, if you deny him this, Kelly will never forget it." Sure enough, I was on that plane from my first couple of days from University of Richmond, took a puddle jumper over to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, seen the golf course, went out for the very first round, of the very first day of the Ryder Cup that Friday, caddying for Lee Trevino, who happened to be playing with Fuzzy Zeller in the first pairing. Can you imagine such a thing? And it was off the charts incredible. Now, one other thing I failed to mention, Bob, why didn't Lee's caddy, why couldn't he make it? Well, his caddy informed him, it was before Herman Mitchell, he informed him that, "Lee, I just can't make it that week. I have other things. Now, can you imagine a caddy today? No, that would not happen. So that kind of gives you an idea of where the Ryder Cup was in 1979, when all of Europe came in, to what it is today. And having that opportunity, though, being the son of an extraordinary man, first and foremost, a great father, and an incredible PGA professional, put me in that position to have those 3 days with Lee, which were unbelievable. One anecdote, by the way, Bob, that first day, Trevino hits a drive. I want to say it was the third or fourth hole. And it ends up on a cart path. And it was a little bit of a kind of a gravelly cart path. It wasn't smooth. So he could drop, of course. But on either side, the grass was rather high. It was of no benefit to him to drop it. So he mulls it over for a minute, and all of a sudden he picks a 6-iron out of the bag, and the crowd's kind of going, "Oh my God, he's going to hit it from the cart path," right? So sure enough, he gets down there and hits it. Perfect trajectory. Ball lands about 20 feet from the hole, and the crowd is going crazy. He hands me the 6-iron, and being the naive 18-year-old that I was at the time, I looked at the bottom of it, thinking, "Well, for sure, he's got to nick it, clean as a whistle." He gives me that look as if to say, "Come on, kid, I'm Lee Trevino." But it went straight down the middle.
Bob, I first met the son of Max Elbin, Kelly Elbin, in 1992 when he was working for the PGA of America. Really good guy. Nice to see him having that type of success.
Certainly want to thank Kelly Elbin. Fascinating stuff. Rich background in the world of golf.